Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for those few of you who have persevered to this final session of the day. We really appreciate your joining us. I think we have some great presentations in this segment, and we also are very fortunate, in addition to our three presenters, each of whom is with an NGLC breakthrough model, we also are fortunate to have Rick Stasloff with us, who is a consultant for colleges across the nation in the area of business models, and he will be our discussant and will lead the question segment at the end, and also has some leading questions for our participants and, if you like, for you. I would also like to encourage those that are sitting in the back, given the small numbers that we have, to move up. Look, you can still be quite far back if you're at one of the further back tables. You can still feel anonymous. So I would really love it if people came forward just a bit. I'd also like to remind everyone that this session is, since it's in this room, is also being streamed to our virtual conference. And if you do have a question when we get to that point in the agenda, if you could please come to a microphone, the folks in the online conference would also be able to hear your question. So with that, I will quickly say a few things about Next Generation Learning Challenges, which is the context within which the breakthrough models operate. What we're hoping to do today is introduce NGLC, the breakthrough models concept, and then look at the stories of three grantees. We have three of our breakthrough models out of the 10 that are with us today, gain some perspective on how they're changing things in terms of the business structure of these programs. We had a session yesterday on the academic models. And when I'm talking about a business model, we're referring to the way that time, human resources, and tuition interact in new ways in these breakthrough models. NGLC, which began in 2010 at this very conference, has an approach of investing in innovation, seeking to use what we learn from that innovation to multiply the knowledge in the field of how applied technology can improve educational opportunities and especially college completion for lower income learners, and then to accelerate the adoption of those effective technologies that can really help with the college completion problems of our country. NGLC's managing partner is EDUCAUSE. We also have another higher ed association partner in the League for Innovation in the Community College. And we work with two associations in K-12 learning, INACOL, International Association for K-12 Online Learning, and the Council of Chief State School Officers, sort of unofficially in the home of the Common Core, where our funding is from both the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, our most important funder, and also from the Hewlett Foundation in some of our work. NGLC's work around business models supports the development of these new models that, again, use human resources, tuition, and human capital in new ways, and really allow institutions to do something that they maybe don't do as often as they might, which is to think really about how the large amounts of investment that are made both by students and institutions in education can be more effective in getting missions achieved of institutions. What we said last year when we launched the competition for the breakthrough models was we asked a question of institutions across the country, which was, can you change both the way you do the academic model and also the way you use the business model and get better results? And can you do it for $5,000 or less a year, both as the institution's cost and as the price that students pay? The challenge was accepted by these 10 institutions that you see listed here. These are the breakthrough model institutions, and the ones in red, which are New Charter University, represented here by Emily Chu, our Kentucky Community and Technical College System, represented by Jim Selby, and Rio Salado College, represented here by Jennifer Freed, are going to be with us today.
Whoops.
Wrong arrow, sorry. So with that, I'll turn the podium over to Jennifer Freed from Rio Salado College.
Thank you and good afternoon. As Nancy mentioned, we are one of the grantees for the NGLC Wave 3B grant, and we as such have kind of merged the academic with our business model to create support for our students to get to that degree completion with a shorter time period as well as low cost. One of the things that's really foundational to our business model is our faculty model, and that's something you'll need to understand about us as we move forward. We have 23 residential faculty members full-time. We have about 12 to 1,400 adjunct faculty members. And so you can see right there that's a slightly different model than you would see in traditional institutions. Part of our faculty model, we rely heavily on the adjunct faculty. We have starts almost every Monday. Students can enter a course almost any Monday of the semester of the year. And faculty, we do not close courses. So a course still makes, even if it only has a few students, we just pay our adjunct faculty accordingly. So that also helps with our sustainability. We have a one course, many sections model, so it does not matter which adjunct faculty is teaching English 101. They all have the same assessments, the same lesson plans, the same syllabus, but they can personalize it in many ways using announcements and things like that in the course. So that's a little background on our faculty model and how that part works. And I will talk more about the student supports and things we're building in as part of the grant. With this disaggregated model, we also have a disaggregated course development and production model. And so the faculty chair works with a subject matter expert, typically maybe it's an adjunct faculty member, to create a course. But they don't, they put everything in Word documents. And from that, the courses are built using a whole team of individuals. We've got the subject matter expert, we've got instructional designers, course production people that take those Word documents, put them online for them. There's project managers, media design, media production. We've got flash programmers and graphic artists and things like that. So it's very disaggregated, and we tell our developers, our course developers, you're really only inhibited by your imagination. You don't have to do it. You just dream it up, and we've got teams of people to do it. So with that kind of that foundation, we are adding in supports and systems into our business model and into our approach to learning as a part of our grant. And there's actually five initiatives that are going to build on this course production and disaggregated model. The first one is our predictive analytics, which is Rio PACE. You'll see that many of these are very technology heavy, which we'll talk about a little bit how that works with our practices and how it helps lower the cost in the end. Rio PACE is our predictive analytics. You can see on the screen a screenshot. Students are their course login frequency, their engagement in the course, so what links they click on and how often they click on them and how much time they're spending is measured, as well as their progress in the course, so how many points they have versus how many points are available at the time. Based on those behaviors, the students are compared to historical data to see if they're exhibiting behaviors that other students who have been successful in the class also exhibited in the past. Based on that, then they get this little icon there under the PACE column in their grade book and in the roster for the instructors that gives them whether they're green, showing they're right on track, they're doing all those behaviors that they should be to be successful. Yellow, they could have some room for improvement. Or red, you really need to look at what you're doing in the class because you'll be more successful if you change a few behaviors. It's not a grade predictor. A student can have an A or a B and be yellow or even red. So there's a lot of training involved for the faculty and the students. With our work with the NGLC grant, we are opening this up so it's not only available to the faculty members and students, but our instructional help desks, advisors, and everybody in the college is going to be able to see this and be able to support the students in that way. We're also doing, we're creating an intervention dashboard called GIVER, Guided Intervention and Response, where triggers are input into a system. And again, this is disaggregating our model a little bit even further, where not just the faculty are going to be seeing what's happening with a student, but advisors, counselors, instructional help desk, technology help desk, they'll all have access to this. The triggers, the behaviors that maybe flag a student as an early alert will get input into the system, and then we'll automate and notify the correct individuals that need to intervene based on these triggers. And they'll have different tiered approaches too. So maybe there's an automated email response from our CRM just reminding a student to log in, or maybe it's going to be a higher tiered intervention needed and an advisor is actually going to contact the student. We also are implementing something called GEAR, Guided Evaluation Assessment and Response, and this is kind of an automated feedback system for instructors as they teach the course. So they will be able to actually use a grading rubric, click very good, good, needs improvement for each of the dimensions on the rubric, and this rich feedback will pre-populate that can be pasted into the assignments. Not canned feedback, but resources for the students. So if they need help with writing, there's going to be writing resources available. If they did fantastic on their application, then maybe there's a journal article linked for them to read so they can get further, you know, into the subject area. But what this is doing is it's going to free up the instructors to give that more personalized feedback in the course and really the one-on-one attention. So they don't have to focus on finding those resources to help the students. Instead, they can say, Johnny, I noticed that you have trouble with concept X specifically, and then go on and provide them that one-on-one rich feedback to support. We have a completion portal that we are developing as well. This is going to be available for advisors and students. We're in the programming phase of this right now, and instructors will also be able to see this, and it'll have everything for the students, their contact information for their advisors. We're implementing peer mentors as part of the grant. We'll have a progress towards completion of their degree. The RioPACE data will feed into this. So this is kind of the central hub of all these technologies that I've been talking about for the grant work. And then finally, we're implementing the people as well. So we will have a student success help desk where we've got dedicated advisors, peer mentors for each student, as well as a student success help desk coordinator and an outreach center individual to help enroll the student. We have touch points all throughout the program, beginning from the minute the student enrolls with us till when they complete their degree with us. So what does all this mean? That's a lot of stuff that we're doing for the grant work. Basically, we have this nice partnership between our IT department and the faculty. And I keep talking about our disaggregated business model, and it's not that we don't like faculty. Some people say, you don't have a lot of faculty members. It's not that at all. We just feel that we're small but mighty, and we can really use these automated IT supports to support our faculty and our adjunct faculty and our students. So for example, the intervention dashboard that we're building is going to automatically alert the correct individuals who need to intervene with the students. Using the completion portal, where everybody in the college gets this holistic picture of the student, just in one place. All of these technologies that are being built through our homegrown systems are going to really automate and help our students and help keep our costs down, because we aren't relying on out of the box. We're able to customize exactly to what we need, and there's so much automation that's going to be involved with us that frees up our faculty to actually reach the students and help them with their completion. And so we will be looking at our return on investment. So the idea behind this is we do obviously want to lower the cost to the student as well as to the institution. We're being funded, but we want to continue this past our funding dates, so we want to make sure that we're able to afford this. We will be measuring how the lower cost in how much we're bringing into the program and how much it's costing our students, but then ultimately the cost of the college. We believe that we're going to be lowering the cost because we're relying on individuals like peer mentors, which we can hire for $10 an hour, and we're allowing more of the automated systems like our CRM and in the intervention dashboard. We are going to be looking at the completion rates and retention, and also because we have this automated system with the completion portal, we'll be alerting our outreach coordinators to enroll students so they can persist from semester to semester. So we think overall that each of these interventions and each of these initiatives with the grant will help lower the cost of the student, but also lower the cost of the college so we can continue with it past the funding of the grant. And so that is our kind of business model, merging technology with our faculty model. And I will go ahead, and I believe that we've got Jim next.
Good afternoon. I, too, want to thank you for being here with us late this afternoon. To put this in context, in 2009, the Kentucky Community and Technical College System launched a program called Learn on Demand. It was one of the nation's first completely online, modular-based degree programs. And we are taking the courseware that was developed and we're utilizing the grant to reconfigure the way that the delivery of the program will be conducted in this new opportunity that we're calling Direct to Degree. A little bit about Direct to Degree: it's linear, it's sequential. We're hoping to be able to optimize student movement through the program. And so what we've been telling people is that all full-time students will all be part-time, because they will only be allowed to take one course at a time. They will be structured in a linear fashion. They will be sequenced, and we'll tell you a little bit about the process for doing that. Our tuition model is one that we're grappling with, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into the questions too, but we're going to use a subscription model. We believe that many of our consumers are used to paying their monthly bills, so our tuition will be a monthly fee, just like their cable bill, and it will be inclusive of all the cost. So it will include what is the tuition, whatever e-resources will be totally embedded, and in the KCTCS system, we have no other fees. We are working with a group from around the country to prepare to approach the Department of Education with an alternative financial aid model that's going to grapple with some of the major barriers that we currently see in a start anytime, go at your own pace, and I'm going to show you those. And then a whole lot about the business model is based upon an analytic tool that we have developed, and our colleague Doug Roberts is here from Kentucky, who is our state budget director. He's worked with a couple of our partners to try to determine how to put together something that could be shared with other institutions of how to do competency-based programs in a linear fashion with a monthly subscription. Here are the challenges and also the opportunities in this type of arrangement. Self-paced projections. We don't know how fast students are going to go. We are looking at how to determine what that subscription rate should be in tuition. We're trying to find a way to be absolutely certain that these students will be able to complete a degree. Our total benchmark, it must be less than what it would have cost them had they gone through a traditional on-ground program. That's a benchmark completion goal for the program. And we don't know how fast enrollment is going to occur. We have no history to know when you're talking to students about entering a program like this one, what should we anticipate in the startup period? Will we see a lot at the beginning? Will it take a while for the concept to catch on? We simply don't know. On the expense side, because we have been teaching now for several years with Learn on Demand, we've got some idea about what the faculty load will look like, but not in this delivery format. You know, we know from our other modularized program how we're doing that. We're compensating faculty on a per-student enrollment. All of the e-resources are embedded, but they all come with different costs, and yet the monthly subscription cost will be the same. So if the student is moving through at their own pace, they may be in their English course the first part of the month. They may switch to a science class at the end of the month. The e-resources for those two courses are vastly different, but yet the monthly tuition amount has to be the same. We don't know yet exactly what the persistence and the retention rates are going to look like, or the attrition rates for students who get into this, but we do know that because of the financial aid challenges, they will not be able to do these courses and do traditional on-ground courses at the same time. It will have to be an either-or kind of a situation. And serious configuration changes that are going to be necessary for PeopleSoft, which is our student information system, and we use Blackboard, to get those systems to talk to each other with this kind of a competency-based structure. And then the whole notion of how to deal with the financial aid and the federal regulations. These are a couple of our partners that we've been working with on the business model. SREB has helped us to try to work on looking at how the persistence rates might look, the pace of students going through. We've been working with NCHIMS to try to look at that analytic cost model and revenue projection model so that we would have a dashboard that shows us, as our retention rates change, as our enrollments change, what's happening to our revenue and what's happening to our projected expenses as we're going through, and we can constantly be updating that and know sort of what pace we're on. I know you can't see that, but this is a copy of the spreadsheet of the analytic tool. And what I'd point out to you is all across the bottom are all factors that are feeding this database. Things like, what is our course success rate? What is the pace of progression? How are students normally doing in this particular course, on ground, online, and in a hybrid manner? And that's helping to feed our anticipated levels of success, or lack thereof, for those courses as they go through. We're looking at the cost for delivery of discipline and the various instructional groups and what the pass rates are. So all of that feeds the spreadsheet. And as you change the enrollment in the upper left-hand corner, you can see how the projected monthly tuition calculation would have to occur. And then we add the e-resources in on top of that. On the financial aid side, here's some of the things that we've run into. The federal regulations govern academic year, and it's defined. It's a time-based calculation. We're talking about a model where time is variable but learning is fixed, which is exactly the opposite of everything else that we do in higher education. Everybody's expected to learn at the same rate, same 15 weeks. It doesn't matter if you get it or not. Here's what the time is because the feds say that's what you have to do. How can we find a way to allow the student to get credit for what they already know and to use federal financial aid? Can we vary the cost of attendance? There are many factors that are built in and are stagnant in federal rules. What about students who would like to be in a non-term-based and a term-based federal aid environment at the same time? And in our case, we want to use a pay-as-you-go. We'll front the first month of tuition to them through their federal aid package, but then they have to be making progress to get additional financial aid every month. So we would have 12 disbursements of federal aid per year. Our return to Title IV risk would be very low because we'd only have 30 days worth of tuition out there. And here's the competency structure. And this is a baccalaureate degree model that we've been working with the University of Wisconsin. It's conceptually the same way that we would do it. There would be a competency structure that says that as students are moving through their competencies, a competency completion schedule would be determined based upon the weight of difficulty of competencies to determine what progress we think students should be able to make over whatever defined period of time we're talking about, whether we're looking at a 30-day period, a 6-month period, or whatever it might be. And so the disbursement schedule would follow the competency schedule, and it would be up to the students to be able to stay on chart. What are we trying to do? Well, we're looking at how can we offer students an opportunity, if they really want to be eager and move through this, to save themselves a bundle. Their costs would be the same for 30 days, no matter how much or how little they get done. And so we've had one of the best questions I think I've been asked in one of these sessions was, how do you know that you're not going to go bankrupt? No, we don't. So here's what we're looking at. We're looking at what do we think students will do. And how can we sustain this kind of a model? What do we expect to have happen? The early reviews from the people that we've talked to is that we think that this is going to be wildly successful, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to offer students an opportunity to go through and to achieve at least an academic degree at a considerably less cost. I will now turn it over to Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I'm representing University Now. We are an ed tech startup that's based out of San Francisco. Our mission is to make a quality higher education available to everyone, and we're doing so by launching two schools. One of the schools is called New Charter University, and the other is called Patton University. New Charter is nationally accredited, and Patton University is regionally accredited. We are one of the Wave 3B breakthrough models, and I think what's interesting is just seeing what all the different models have in common and just elements where we are all innovating in different ways and testing out different elements. I'd say two of the things that distinguish us from some of the other panelists is that we don't take federal funding. When we acquired Patton University and were reaccredited, we were one of the first institutions and possibly the only one that was eligible for Title IV, but decided not to participate. And that actually has a lot of implications on our business model and how we can create the learning experience for students, which I'll go into in more detail. The other distinguishing factor, I think, that really shapes our business model is that we started from scratch. We had the luxury of not being tied to an existing model, and so a team of us came together 3 years ago and just really asked ourselves the question, if we were to design a university today from scratch, you know, and be able to rethink everything from the business model to the faculty model to the actual learning platform, which we built ourselves from scratch, what would that look like, and how would it be different from how things have already been done? And I'll get into that in a little bit. This slide kind of summarizes some of the key elements of what we think distinguishes our model from traditional models of higher education. We're not strictly competency-based. We start with industry councils because our programs right now are very much focused towards non-traditional students, but mostly working adults. These are older adults that are taking on the most amount of student loan debt. Adults 30 and older have been the category that's been hit the hardest, and we really wanted to design something that would be more flexible for them, something that would make it work with their schedule, something that employers would value, and something that would be affordable enough so they wouldn't have to take on student loan debt. And so what we did was start with industry councils who helped us define the competencies that they would value in graduates coming out of our programs. From those competencies, we designed and mapped our degree programs as well as courses as well as all of our materials. So we kind of mapped everything to those competencies. But because we have courses and instructors and materials, we're not strictly competency-based, which in the strictest definition is just a series of tests. And so we're self-paced. Students can move at their own pace. If life gets busy, they can hit pause. If they need more time to complete it, you know, they can take that time. And if they already know the material because they've been working, they just never earn the degree, or if they can learn it more quickly, they can move faster. And so the first point is just that it's outcomes-based and it's self-paced. We do have a faculty model that's disaggregated, and so a big component of our model is personalized coaching, where every student that comes in is assigned a coach. And this is someone that follows them through the duration of their entire academic career and is really there to guide them through everything from work-life conflicts and how to navigate that to their degree program of choice and how they should think about picking courses. We have instructors that actually teach the courses, and then separate role is someone who independently grades it. We built our own learning platform from scratch. It's an adaptive learning platform which goal is to give students and faculty members instant feedback into how the student is doing. I'll give you some screenshots later. And a big piece of our business model is that it's try before you buy. With New Charter University, you can actually log in with Twitter and Facebook or create your account in literally 5 minutes, maybe less, and access the entire learning platform for free. Because you're not an enrolled student at that point, you don't have a faculty member assigned to you. But the whole idea is how can we lower barriers so students know what they're getting before they have to commit to paying an exorbitant amount of money for tuition or taking on debt, and really just experience the entire platform, make sure it works for them before they decide to commit to it. Enrollment with us takes 30 days because we're non-Title IV and we don't have to manage all of the student loan processing elements, and it's a pay-as-you-go model. And I'll touch upon, like, again, the significance of Title IV and how that helps us both lower costs and create a self-paced platform that works for our target students. I touched upon the disaggregated instructional model. One of the interesting things about having independent evaluators is we can make sure that there's no grade inflation, and we can actually compensate our instructors based on how well they're doing and helping their students across a number of different metrics. Our instructors and advisors also are able to spend more time with students. They spend 32 hours per week with students, and when they contact students, it's with full information on how the student's doing, from how much effort they're putting in to the exact things that they're struggling with. So the phone call and the intervention isn't, hey, how are you doing? Can we check in? Tell me what you're struggling with. It's, you know, either you're doing great, keep it up, or it's, you know, I see that you're struggling with exactly this element. You know, I see that you're not putting in the effort. Is there something we can help you with? You know, is it a work-life conflict? Or is it something that we can intervene on and help you think through? And so that's where sort of the disaggregated faculty model works with the technology platform and the real-time data that we give both students and faculty members on how students are doing to create a model that's, in our view, more personalized, more efficient, and very much targeted to the student and what the student needs. We offer associate's, bachelor's, and master's degree programs. It's online. We have a tuition model that's per term, per year, or per month. You really can pick what works for you. If it's per month, it's $329 per month. It's an incredibly affordable model that's regionally accredited. Courses include all required ebooks, materials, and as many classes as a student can complete per term, which is 4 months. This is how our tuition compares. Really outside of California community colleges, there's nothing else that's regionally accredited that's comparable in price. And this is just a preview of our learning model. You'll see that there's a green bar there. That's not a progress bar. That's actually a mastery bar. And when you dive into the interface a little bit more deeply, it gives you really detailed feedback on what you're doing well on, what you're not doing well on. And in certain cases, you can actually put in more effort, but see that mastery bar go backwards if you're not applying yourself the right way. And in every situation in which that happens, we've seen automatic phone calls from the student to their coach or their faculty instructor saying, what's going on? I just did something. I expected that green bar to go up, but it's going down. Can we get some feedback on what I can do to improve that? You see kind of on the right-hand side, there's photos of other people in this unit. One of the challenges with online models is often students feel lost and alone, and there isn't always that sense of community. And so how we've thought about cohorts and building community with students, especially with a self-paced model where everyone's moving at a different pace, is to group students so you can see who else is in your course, so studying something similar to you, and also moving and studying at a similar pace as you. And so we try to match students up based on pace, based on content, and also based on similar profiles. Your instructor is always there. You can see when they're online, what their hours are. And the whole idea is to build a really intuitive platform, kind of Facebook-like, where you can connect with your peers, find the resources that you need, and get a lot of real-time data on how you're doing and where you actually need to focus your efforts. This is an example of what an e-textbook looks like in our platform. And you'll see on this slide, it shows you your score, it shows you additional exercises you can do, and it asks the question, how ready are you to move on to the next unit? And in this case, you know, the student is not very ready, and you could it maps it to the exact objectives that the student needs to focus more time on. And the whole idea is guide them to where they need to focus their time and give them a lot of feedback on where they need to improve their mastery over competencies. So that's the latest. We changed the green bar with colors just to give a little bit more feedback. So I'll go back to the slide where we talk about our platform and how it's different. With stepping away from Title IV, in addition to moving away from all of the overhead that comes with managing that, we actually are able to offer students one course at a time. Given that a lot of these are working adults who have lives and schedules that are challenging and busy, this was actually a very important component for us to offer a model that was affordable enough where they could either pay out of pocket, and it's not a big deal, it's like your cable bill or your phone bill, or actually over 85% of companies offer tuition assistance, and with our low-cost model, the annual caps for tuition and reimbursement actually exceed our tuition in many cases, and so it almost creates an alternative funding mechanism by which working adults can go to school for free. And actually make it work with their schedules. We have semester starts every Monday. Courses continue through the year. And because you move one course at a time, it doesn't have the requirements in their Title IV where you have to take a full course load, which is 4 classes, which is actually quite hard. I don't know if any of you have tried managing going to college and working and taking care of your kids at the same time. But a lot of the students that we talk to who enroll in our school are frontline workers for companies that have kids, have families that they need to manage, and work schedules that are incredibly busy. So giving them the flexibility of being able to focus on one class at a time to be successful without the pressure of taking a full course load, and the option to be able to move at their own pace actually enables a lot of people who need college degrees, either because they don't have that advanced degree that they need to get the promotion, or because they had a bunch of different credits from a bunch of different schools but never finished for whatever reason because life got in the way, to actually complete that degree and improve their job prospects. So we see a lot of working adults signing up for our platform. And just stepping away from Title IV enables us to both cater to them in terms of offering them a one course at a time model that's self-paced, that works better for their schedules, and also just make our whole enrollment process so much simpler. Like we say enrollment in 30 minutes, it's actually closer to 18. We've been just continuously timing the students who have been signing up and seeing that the value proposition really is apparent for them. Just the number of calls we get from students saying, I almost signed up for financial aid and took on $10,000 or $20,000 worth of student loan debt. Or students that we meet who had to drop out of school and are still stuck with tons of debt, who have now found a way to not only defer their debt but complete their degrees in an affordable way. It's just been really inspiring for us because that's kind of the model that we built with the goal of just addressing a lot of non-traditional learners who need degrees but need a better option in an environment where college costs are going up. There are capacity constraints across different kinds of institutions. And a big piece of this is just solving, meeting the student where they are and creating a more flexible and affordable model that caters to them. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Rick Stasloff, who is with RPK Group, as I mentioned at the beginning, will be joining us to moderate discussion, take your questions, and also ask questions of our panelists.
Great.
Rick?
Thank you, Nancy. So now's the time for all of your questions, both from our virtual audience and from all the participants in the room. We would ask if you do have questions to please come up to the microphone so we can make sure as we're streaming everyone can hear you. So to kick it off for the panel and thinking about bridging from our conversation in this very room yesterday on academic models, there's been this rather artificial dichotomy, this false dichotomy between we can either have quality or we can think about margins, think about our business models. Can you talk about how the ways you paid attention to your business model helped you hopefully bridge that divide, to have a different kind of dialogue with stakeholders, maybe to think more holistically? Maybe Jen, if you could kick off for us.
One of the things that I've alluded to in my presentation is we really wanted to focus on sustainability long term. We are being funded, but we believe truly that this is going to help our students succeed, and we want to be able to offer it to students beyond the population of the grant. So we were very aware as we were designing our model that we wanted to have something that was sustainable. And so I do believe because we are building all the technology infrastructure in-house, it is something that we own. We have our own built learning management system. We have all of these different interventions and that we're building all are just seamless with this learning management system. We do believe that once we have this built, we have it. We'll have cost to sustain it, but we have it. It's ours. And this technology infrastructure automates so many things for us and really reduces the load on our faculty that they can then go on and support the students and increase completion. So I think that we're just very cognizant of that marriage between IT and the people, that the faculty, the advisors, the peer mentors, and everybody that's going to be touching the students. And so I think that we're trying to find that good balance because a lot of times the high-touch programs, which is what we're going for, are the ones that cost the most. Right. And so we're trying to actually kind of mitigate some of that with the technology.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what Jennifer said. There are a couple things that have sort of been foundation principles here, and that is that we know that our working adult student population, and for that matter, the non-working adult student population, are in a situation where they have to have both flexibility and low cost. and yet we can't afford to give up on quality. So what was really nice for us was to be able to take exactly the same academic program that we've always had and has been tested both on ground, in a hybrid manner, and online totally, and now to just simply reconfigure the way in which it's going to be delivered, particularly on the business side. We have some ideas, I think, about what we can anticipate our cost would look like, but what we don't know is what the cost will look like as it gets scaled. And I think that's really the greater challenge for us, is that we can see sort of what it would take to teach one student. As we attempt to move that out then to 100 or to 500 or to a couple thousand, what we're trying to anticipate is what's going to be the ramp-up side on the human side, because we're doing all of the same wraparound student services that my colleagues have mentioned. We're going to have a faculty member assigned for each part of the curriculum in every area. Each student's going to have their own coach. We already have decided that we've got a 24/7, 365 help desk that's available, that we have third-party contracted on that. We're using several out of other vendors to help us with this, BrainFuse, Starfish. We're looking at 24/7 tutoring to be available and the costs associated with that. So as we attempt to bring in all of those associated costs into a new delivery mechanism, not knowing for sure what the enrollment is going to look like, it makes projecting what your expense side is going to be very difficult. And that's, quite frankly, what's driving the amount that we would wind up charging per month, is what do we need to do to break even? Is sort of the way that we've been looking at that, and how much could we afford during a ramp-up period to not break even? And that's what puts additional gray hairs on Doug's head.
It's good to know what your job is, Doug. Emily?
Yeah, I guess I'll just touch upon the fact that a lot of this is storytelling and really educating the student on a new wave of models that are emerging. None of this is new. Western Governors has been able to deliver a low-cost model that employers have valued. And if you actually look at what's contributing to the cost of college and break it down between things that support student success versus things that don't, it's not hard to figure out which elements you can cut out based on what you value to lower the cost for students while delivering something that's more quality. And I'll be more specific. We actually compensate our faculty more than a lot of other models. And the way we're able to do that is that's something that we really value. You know, when it comes to marketing, if you look at the business models for a lot of schools that make it public, a quarter to a third of their costs are in marketing and spending a ton of money on billboards, TV spots, ads. And from our perspective, that's not something that contributes to student success. And if you're able to cut that out, you're already cutting out a third of the cost. You know, so it's a lot, I think, about what you value. We don't have a research institution. We don't have a football team, you know, but we do dedicate resources where we think it matters. To Jennifer's point, technology can help. It doesn't replace the faculty, but it makes it such that they can be really efficient and targeted in delivering personalized coaching and instruction to students where they need it. And in our view, like, that increases quality while reducing costs. So I think there's a lot of elements that can be deconstructed. And I think just as a group, if we could tell our story and really educate people on why things can be done differently from how they've always been done, and why that's actually a good thing for students, that can help solve some of the structural cost issues, you know, I think that's a good thing, because most people don't even know what's contributing to the rising cost of college or why.
So the ways that helps us take apart what has been that black box of higher education finance is pretty powerful. So we know, speaking of boxes, your models didn't come in a box, and you got to open them up and just launch them out into the world. Can you talk a little bit about how the models evolved over time, and what were the triggers that caused that evolution?
Well, for us, when we made the decision back, I guess, in 2007 and 8 to put the modular-based online degree program together, it was in a traditional take four classes if you want to at a time model, and I agree with Emily. I think that with the new program that we're looking at, where it's one course at a time, that's kind of the next iteration for us, is can we achieve greater levels of student success when they're not so burdened with all of the things that adult students have to deal with every day in their life, but then have all of that much academic rigor on top. I've told people that, you know, all of us anecdotally sort of know. I told my own kids in the summertime, I want you to take one class. Pick one that's hard because it's the only one you're going to work on. You can concentrate on just that one. And they did that, and both of them did exceedingly well. Does anybody happen to know what the research says about the efficacy of taking one course at a time in terms of student success? No, you don't, because there is none. And so, part of, Rick, what we know going in are the things that we don't know. And it's both kind of frightening, but yet at the same time very exciting to think that we're going to provide some information to the body of knowledge that's needed about what helps students to be successful in these types of formats.
Cool. Any other members of the panel, as you think about how the model's changed and how it's evolved over time?
Our Rio Salado was founded as an alternative institution, and we had, you know, kind of the breakthrough models right from the beginning. And so I think one of the things that has really changed with us in recent times is, you know, the addition of courses starting just about every Monday of the year, students being able to enroll into courses and take courses as they need to. And we've had some of the same restrictions you mentioned about the financial aid model as a result of that. So we've actually had to kind of scale back a little bit and work on that to maintain regulatory compliance with the financial aid. And so I think that our model we're using more of our I keep talking about the technology, but we're using more of the technology to support the base so we can now focus on the people. Before, we had all the people, and then we started enrolling students every Monday, and now we've got all these students in different points in the class at any given time, and how do we manage that? And so now we're allowing for more alerts and more automated so the instructors can manage that, and so the students are better supported too. So I think that we kind of started off ahead of the game, realized, you know, we really need to add a little bit more of this technology piece to be able to really support it.
Rick, I would add one more piece that has changed for us. We added the student coaches we just started that like a year ago, I guess. And early results, for those who are interested in whether or not the expense related to student success coaches is worth it, our early data is that we've seen a decline in drop rate by 60% after we added our first set of coaches. We're now going to be adding twice as many again as we've started out with. Because we are seeing that student persistence rates have gone up, which also translates into our business model very well.
Absolutely. So we know NGLC is all about disseminating knowledge out into the field. So as everyone here is going to go home, and starting Monday, they are going to launch something new and innovative inside their institution or new. But if you thought about advice that you would give from your experiences, what would you share out to the field in terms of those top learnings that they should be thinking about as they are moving forward with some innovative models? Other than don't do it, you know, stay home.
Other than if you're in the Southern Association, change accreditors. I think that there are quite a few lessons. I mean, part of it is that you have to know that you have a commitment from the highest levels to really attempt to do something that you're not going to have solid data going into to know exactly what the ramifications are going to be. And I think that part of that I would say to you is, if you're going to use a competency-based model, start working on that. If you're going to use direct assessment in the federal aid concept, start working on that, but talk to your accreditors and talk to the Department of Education and start those conversations early, because those are the things that are going to hang you up. I mean, in many ways, we have such great faculty who do curriculum reconfigurations all the time. You know, moving into a modular-based or online, it's getting to be second nature for them. It's this other stuff that, you know, that gets in the way so often, that gets beyond the control of you or your campus, even your own system, to be able to deal with. Start working on those big-picture items as soon as you can and try to know what barriers you're going to run into. And then the other biggie for us is the normal student information system platforms don't talk very well to competency-based programs. And so if you're not going to build your own from the ground up, it's going to be very difficult to do. If you're a Banner or PeopleSoft or whatever it is, you've got a lot of work ahead of you to try to measure student progress in going through the system.
I would say to leverage your strengths that you currently have. You don't have to break down everything and start new. We continued using, you know, the same learning management system, the same platform, the same faculty model as we created these new breakthrough models. But we really looked at and focused on what we're good at, and we're very good at that IT, faculty, staff, marriage, blending, working together, systems approach, however you want to put it. And we utilize that. And I also don't forget the people and the humans that are involved. And because it's really easy, and we talk about all these new models and the technology and the systems and the portals, but we have students there and we have people that want to touch the students too. And so I think we need to kind of support the staff and professional development as well as the technologies.
Great.
I think for us, it's been interesting just the different types of people and different backgrounds of people you need to bring together to really think things differently. In our case, you know, we're based in San Francisco, and a big piece of our model is technology-enabled. And so just having a team of your Silicon Valley startup coders in the same company as people who have built academic institutions with, like, us crazy startup business people has been interesting because it's created tensions where there are always cultural differences, there are always ways that you come up upon each other in terms of different thinking, where on the extreme it's, why can't we do things like this crazy way? And on the other side, it's, you know, people who are vetted in academia who really understand how things have been done. And I think you need both groups to really rethink things. And it creates cultural challenges, but it also creates a lot of innovative thinking around what can be done, what should be done, and how you actually create progress and innovation, and still in the context of what best serves the students, with experience of educators who know that. So I think that's been interesting for us, just being a de novo model. We've also encountered, you know, and I think even for those who are working to innovate within existing institutions, it's really important to bring in different groups of people and get everyone's buy-in. In situations where we're like, we're new and we're great, you know, and you don't engage all different kinds of constituents up front, it's been hard to get change done. And I think that it just involves a lot of working across different constituents, you know, from getting the faculty comfortable to getting your partners comfortable to getting all the different pieces in place to build something new. That's been our greatest learning, our greatest challenge, and also something that's enabled us to do something different.
Great. So a lot of learnings already. Very exciting to come back in 2014 to EDUCAUSE and see how the models have continued to evolve. So that's an invitation to all of you to come back and see how the story moves forward. Nancy?
And next time, we're going to get a spot that isn't 4:30 on Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much for coming, everyone, and thanks for your interest in the breakthrough models that are doing such interesting and groundbreaking work.
Thank you.